ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 वर्स 12 चैप्टर 12 वर्स नंबर 24। तस्याखिला जगद्धातुर् तस्याखिला जगद्धातुर् आवं देवस्य शारंगिनः आवं देवस्य शारंगिनः पार्श्वदाविह संप्राप्तौ पार्श्वदाविह संप्राप्तौ नेतुं त्वं भगवत्पदम् नेतुं त्वं भगवत्पदम् तस्याखिला जगद्धातुर् आवं देवस्य शारंगिनः पार्श्वदाविह संप्राप्तौ नेतुं त्वं भगवत्पदम् तस्याखिला जगद्धातुर् आवं देवस्य शरंगिनः पार्श्वदाविह संप्राप्तौ नेतुं त्वं भगवत्पदम् तस्या अखिला हिज एक्चुअली तस्या हिज अखिला एंटायर जगत यूनिवर्स धातु क्रिएटर आवाम वी देवस्य द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड शारंगिनः वन हू हैज द बो नेम शारंग पार्षदो एसोसिएट्स इह नाउ संप्राप्तो अप्रोच नेतुम टू टेक त्वाम यू भगवत्पदम टू द पोजीशन ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड ट्रांसलेशन We are the representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the whole universe, who carries in his hand the bow named Sharanga. We have been specifically deputed to take you to the spiritual world. Can you repeat the translation? We are the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the whole universe, who carries in his hand the bow named Sharanga. We have now been specifically deputed to take you to the spiritual world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that simply by knowing his transcendental pastimes, whether within this material world or in the spiritual world, anyone who understands factually who he is, how he appears, and how he acts can be immediately fit for transfer to the spiritual world. This principle stated in Bhagavad Gita operated in the case of King Dhruva. Throughout his life he tried to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by austerity and penances. Now the mature result was that Dhruva Maharaj became fit to be carried to the spiritual world, accompanied by the confidential associates of the Lord. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुधापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतम सावधूतम परिजन सहितम कृष्ण चैतन्य देवम श्री राधा कृष्ण पादान सहगणा ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये पंचकल्पत्रुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे हरे कृष्ण. सो द कन्वर्सेशन ऑफ नंदा एंड सुनंदा द एसोसिएट्स ऑफ द लॉर्ड हु केम टू टेक ध्रुव महाराज इट कंटिन्यूस दे आर स्पीकिंग टू ध्रुव महाराज. Yesterday that verse, they started talking to him and they continue today to explain who they are and about something about the Supreme Lord. So in the translation they're telling that we are the representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the whole universe, who carries in his hand the bow named Sharanga, and we have been specifically deputed to take you to the spiritual world. So it's interesting that these dutas or these messengers or these direct men of these powerful personalities, like even the Supreme Personality Godhead or even Yamaraj, they come to take away a living entity at the time of death. And when we've all heard the pastimes of Ajamil in sixth canto, when this deputed officers of Yamaraj, they come to take away Ajamil, they have their own style of taking him. They have their own way of taking the soul. They have their own approach and no one can check it. So what is their approach? Is they forcefully snatch the soul out of the body, because soul is extremely attached to the body. And they want to drag the soul out, and soul doesn't want to leave at the time of death due to so many attachments and to the body and people related to the body and acquisitions of the body. So the pain is understood in a simple example, that if we are in a house, or suppose if we are in this room and someone has to forcefully drag us out of this room, then if someone has to actually forcefully drag us out of this room and we don't want to go, we will actually hold on to many things. People around us, objects, so many things we'll try to hold on to. And if someone really is actually dragging us out, what will they do? They'll beat us, they'll push us, they'll really drag us. It's a very painful way if someone is forcefully dragged out of a place. So that happens to the soul. It's a very painful experience. It's much more times more pain. It's of course there's thousands of times more painful experience than just dragging out of a room. But just to understand the scene, that's how the soul is pulled out of the body, and that's why they have their yam pash, their instrument, and they have their own style. So in case of Ajamil, they literally, after, it's not that once the soul is out of the body, it's forced out of the body, then they just have a happy ride back to Yamaloka. Even on the way they beat. It is explained that the route which was very nicely chosen for Ajamil was, he was dragged on in scorching heat, which we can't even tolerate. And he's taken there without water and beaten simultaneously. So one of the acharyas, they explained that usually two Yamadutas come to take a soul out, sinful soul. But Ajamil was so sinful that three came. They didn't wanted to give any break in beating him on the way also. They were like so upset with him, by his activities. So he was that sinful. So they have their style. Now we see, in contrast, Vishnudutas have come. They are very nicely talking to Dhruva Maharaj, explaining him, oh, we are the deputed messengers. Even in Ajamil case, Vishnudutas came, but it's a different scene. So, when Vishnudutas come to take away the soul, someone has to come. Either Yamadutas or Vishnudutas, either of them will come to take us. So when the Vishnudutas come, they have a very affectionate way of dealing with the living entity, because that living entity has qualified to become an eternal associate of the Lord like they are. That living entity has perfected their relationship with the Supreme. So it's a very affectionate way of taking, and a Pushpak Viman comes, a plane with of flowers come. There it was scorching, painful journey, and here it's a very, very affectionate, very caring, very soft journey towards the spiritual world, and it remains like that, very happy after that, the living entity. So here, that's the scene going on where Dhruva Maharaj has been asked, and they are just making themselves, they are giving their identification, who we are and what is our purpose to come, be here and to take him back home, back to God, Dhruva Maharaj. So here in purport, Srila Prabhupada immediately takes away the context to explain how to attain that, how to achieve that position or that destination. In Prabhupada's, on many of his lectures, most of his lectures, his purports, three things he very clearly establishes more than any other information, because these are the three things which Srila Prabhupada wants us to understand as soon as possible, as better as possible, and as clear as possible. And those three things are the identity of the individual, which is the soul, which is our identity as spiritual being. Then second is who God is, explaining about God and His identity. And the third thing he very quickly establishes while doing that is, I understand who I am and I understand who God is. Then he, in many of his purports, is talking about the relationship between the two, that sambandha. So that sambandha, that relationship, is very, very emphatically, very clearly, again and again established, even in Bhagavad Gita, in verses which is not at all talking about that subject matter. Even now, it's talking about something else. But Prabhupada very quickly brings the audience back to the focal point, that's how you achieve it, that's what you want to do. So here Prabhupada is actually quoting the translation of the verse from Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Where he's talking about janma karma chame divyam evam yuveti tattvatah tektva deham punar janma naiti mameti so Arjuna. You know this verse? So Prabhupada is the whole translation or purport of this verse is translation of that shloka, and then he expands a little bit on that. So we'll go a little bit on that shloka, because in one of the conversations with Brahmanand Prabhu, Prabhupada is saying that shloka, that verse 4.9, is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Now, it's a nice verse to memorize. Now, the essence of that shloka, why Prabhupada is saying, means one who understands my janma and karma, my activities and my birth, my appearance, tattvataha, in truth, Naiti Mameti so Arjuna, Tektva Deham Punarjanma. Upon giving up this body, he never comes back to this material world. Means he goes to the spiritual world, attains me. That's a translation of that shloka. So now Prabhupada is saying that this is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, he has told that many shlokas are very important and they are essential. But that particular shloka he's talking about, very essential, is because that shloka concludes the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness in three different phases again. First, it explains that Krishna, his body, his activities, his appearance, the way he deals with his devotees, what he has done when he comes to with his associates is not material. It's completely transcendental. So Krishna's activities, first thing from that shloka, which is very important, that verse is establishing, Krishna himself is establishing in Bhagavad Gita, is that my activities and my appearance and my body, which many people can call as material, is completely transcendental. So your vision towards me, my activities, and whatever I am doing with this form of mine is transcendental. There are no defects in it. So that's the first point he is establishing with that verse. The second thing he is establishing is that these things, my transcendental form and activities, have to be understood in tattva, in truth. Not just, you know, now many times, you know, first time someone comes to temple, they hear this point, Krishna is transcendental. So then we know the truth. But it doesn't affect us at all. Or very little effect we have on us because we don't know the tattva. In tattvata, in truth, in complete totality, to whatever capacity we can, we don't understand this point. That Krishna's activities, his appearance, is transcendental. And that's why so much of philosophy is given to explain that particular one point. How Krishna's activity is transcendental. So in tattva, in truth, one has to understand by bhakti philosophy. By the knowledge of devotional scriptures. By hearing from Vaishnavas, devotees. Then the third thing he explains is, once that is understood in tattvata, then the destination is the spiritual world. Then no more coming back to this place of misery. Then one attains the spiritual abode. So that concludes one's exit from this world. So because it concludes, this verse talks about these very important three things. Prabhupada very rightly says that it is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, there are many, many verses which are again talking about the most essential things. Sarvadharman parita jamamana bhavan bhakta. But this verse concludes the whole particular subject matter also. So, once we know, you know, many of us, even as devotees, not devotees, doesn't matter. Many of us are enamored, very enchanted by great people. Movie stars, sports person, actor, actresses, doesn't matter. Very much enchanted, very much enamored by their glories, their greatness. A little donation some big actor makes, you know, our heart immediately turns to, oh, how nice is that? And then a little charity work some big person does, you know, Bill Gates gave this much donation for child welfare. Immediately, oh wow, that's so amazing. And within, if given opportunity, all of us wants to have relationship with them. If given a chance. All of us wants to come close to these great people whom we admire or look up to. But we know that it's not possible, or it's almost next to impossible. Because this is all subconscious mind. No? We all know within that this is next to impossible due to two things. Due to they being limited and they can approach us. Because, and we being limited, we can approach them. These both the reasons make it very difficult for us to even think that we can have a relationship with them, even though we want to, even though actually we want to. If you think about it, suppose, you know, on last Janmashtami, when South Indian actress came, I don't know who she was, but she was very popular, looks like, in South India. And when she went out, of course, she gave her speech, and then there are my temples also in South India, whatever. But when she went out on the street, many people just wanted to come and have a photograph with her. And we were standing with a group of students, and there were a couple of girls, 3-4 boys, we were all standing. And then one girl ran, I want to take a picture. I want to show it to my mother that I met her. You know, she was. So I said, who is she? Why are you so acting so crazy? You know, why are you running? This is, a lot of crowd was actually trying to come close to her. And then she went and then she took a picture, she had a chat with her. And she said, now this chat I'll remember for my whole life. And this picture I'll save it for my whole life. People feel it. Suppose that lady, that actress, would tell her, oh, I really liked you. Why not have lunch together? This girl would leave anything for that. To have a lunch or a dinner with her, to have an ongoing relationship. And if it continues, she'll continue. That's how it is. That's what we all want. Actually, we all want. But we know it's not possible because of our limitedness and that person's limitedness. But here, when we are talking about a relationship with someone so great, so amazing, from our side, limitedness can be understood. But from his side, there is no limit. He's not limited. You know, the other day, one devotee was telling me that when he read chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita, the greatness of the absolute truth, he felt so much awe after reading that chapter. Wow! That he's so big that I cannot have a relationship with him. That sambandha cannot be established because he's so big. He's so great. You know, the chapter is like that. Even Arjuna feels after that, you know, who means I was joking with you. I was talking to you. I was telling you different names. But you're so big. I was doing a mistake. And Krishna had to pacify, become normal again. So, it's very natural. Because we as limited beings, when we see someone so great, in our subconscious mind, even though we have desire, we know we are limited, we cannot have relationship. But the interesting thing here is that unlimited wants unlimited relationships. And in that list of unlimited relationships, we are also there. In the list of that unlimited relationships, our name is there. It's just that we have to somehow establish it, find it. So a major step, a very, very big step can be taken towards that relationship is just by one thing. It's sambandha bodh, or just having knowledge about that relationship. It's just having little bit information about that relationship. If that information is there about that relationship, it can take us immediately many steps forward towards the Supreme Lord. Another nice example is given that, you know, in India, before there were child marriages, you know, suppose that one girl and boy, they're going to a same school. You know, girls, boys, they fight a lot. There's a lot of fight between them. Naturally. And then the girls' group will tease the boys' group will tease the girls. Now the girl comes home and their parents have fixed that this boy who is in your school is going to be your husband. They have decided it. This is fixed. Now the girl knows, oh, this boy in this group is going to be my husband. So just the knowledge of the relationship that he will be my husband in future will change the whole vision, will completely change the whole equation, how she is going to deal and see that boy every time in school now, from now onwards. Just by this one statement that now he is going to be my husband. And when she is in school, she'll make something and give it to him. Just example. I don't know how it used to work before, but just an example. I don't know exactly what used to happen in child marriages, but let's say we'll turn around our own example, we'll twist it. So then she'll try to protect the boy. If anyone is criticizing the boy, anyone in the girls' group, she'll be very defensive, can't handle criticism, because she knows, going to be my husband. How powerful is just some knowledge about our relationship with the Supreme. And that's why Prabhupada most of the time is hitting on this one point. That first of all, the identity crisis is solved, that who we are actually. And then the Supreme Lord's position is established, and very quickly he establishes the relationship between the two. Very, very quickly he establishes. And once that is done, I mean, immediately, you know, all of us are sitting here for that purpose only. We want to become a little more closer in that relationship. In that sambandha, we want to be a little bit more closer. We want to go ahead in that relationship. So that's exactly what happens. You know, Giriraj Maharaj says that for a relationship to really flourish, for any relationship to flourish to its best capacity, two things are very necessary. The first thing, which is very, very important, is spending time with the person whom you want to develop relationship with. And the second thing, he says, is being attentive. You know, when in a relationship, again, we'll take the example of a girl and boy, they decided, okay, then they'll get married. Now, they spend a lot of time together because they want to know each other and whatever. So there's a lot of time spent for each other. When the time is spent, while we are spending the time together, if our attention is somewhere else, it doesn't help very much establishing that relationship. You know, you're thinking of someone else, but you're spending time with someone else. You know, you're thinking of your work all the time, but you're spending time with someone else. Or you're always thinking of someone else. You're always thinking of your partner, but you're not spending time. At work, you're always thinking, oh, I want to do this for my family, I want to do that for my family, I want to do this for my wife, I want to do this for my husband, I want to do this for my parents. Very attentive, always thinking about them, but not spending time. So both are very important, goes very well together. And that's why when someone becomes a new devotee, lot of attention, lot of importance is not given on being attentive first. Lot of importance is given on spending more time. That means, I'm telling in relationship to time, to standing, in relationship to association, in relationship to coming to temple. When new people come, how many times we tell, you know, when aarti is happening, you have to repeat loud. When chanting is happening, be very attentive, be focused. Doesn't matter you do one mala, but you only focus on the quality. You don't worry about the quantity. Rather we say, you increase the quantity of your chanting, you come more often to the temple, you associate more with the devotees, we are talking about quantity more, means spend more time. And then gradually, the knowledge of being attention is given simultaneously to that same devotee. Why? Because after spending time, attention has to follow very quickly. Otherwise, you know, it says that the relationship will not take much time to become hackneyed. It will become so boring, troublesome, dragging that too much of familiarity will come if attention is not given while we are spending time. You know, that's why if sometimes, you know, in a relationship, you know, within a family or within husband, or if there's too much of tussle, too much of friction going on, even though there are a lot of time spending together, they take a break. Okay, let's go for a family weekend. Let's spend time together, quality time together. What they're trying to do is, let's be attentive to each other. Let's be attentive and re-establish, revitalize that relationship again. So when that happens, these two things, when that happens, it changes the whole course of a relationship or sambandha. So when we're talking about inattention, in ashram the other day we were discussing very, very amazing points. Especially to chanting, which is the most powerful source of developing relationship with the Supreme Lord, which is through chanting, because that's His most merciful aspect. The most merciful incarnation or avatar or appearance of the Supreme Lord is His holy name. The most merciful, the most kind. So when attention is given to that most merciful avatar or of the Supreme Lord, the holy name, it's on a very rapid speed the relationship is developed, the sambandha is established. So now with that Actually, all of us are struggling. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that inattention is the sole purpose of all the other 10 offenses. Inattention is powerful enough, not the sole purpose, but powerful enough to cause all the offenses to happen. And every day morning we chant all the 10 offenses. And in quietly at the end we say, it's also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. But inattention, being inattentive, is actually causing all the other 10 offenses. It's literally causing all the other 10 offenses. If we are inattentive in chanting, we'll disobey the spiritual master. We'll be offensive to Vaishnavas. We'll reject Vedic scriptures' authorities. We'll start doing sinful activities, taking the holy name as the sole basis because we are inattentive in chanting. That's how powerful it is, inattention in chanting. So, the three types of inattention mentioned, that's what we discussed the other day with all the brahmacharis. I felt it is good, very, very, very interesting thought of sharing it today. The first one is indifference. Odasinya, indifference. Very indifferent. Doesn't matter how the quality is, what chanting we do, not very alert on the quality of it. Okay, somehow I have to finish 16 rounds. Drag it. Anyways, no, not much option. Once in a while it's okay, emergency, night is there, you're struggling somehow to finish, it's already getting close to midnight, then quickly chanting can happen. But when regularly it becomes a habit of just being very casual actually. Indifference means you're too casual. You're overly casual with the person, and you're talking to me and then I say, so what? So, cool, you know. Doesn't make a difference to you. That person doesn't make any difference to you. The second one, we do it, but not on regular, everyday basis. I chant like that. Many devotees do it, honestly. We have seen it, but it should be changed. The second one is jadeya, latharji, very lazy to chant even properly. Very lazy to even chant properly. I remember when I initially became a devotee, it took me a few years to understand why that happened with me. But devotees told me, just first few days, you just focus on pronouncing it properly and making sure that you're chanting all the syllables. And I did it. This happened in India. Then after coming to Melbourne, after 4 or 5 years, I was just sitting with some devotees here and I was chanting. And that devotee had a recorder in his hand. I said, why are you recording? Means it's recording your own chanting. Means your own chanting you're recording and you listen or what? Why are you recording your own chanting? He said, because over the years I've developed a bad habit of not pronouncing all the syllables. So now I'm working on it. It's too hard for me to work on it now. To chant. You know, many devotees actually don't chant all the 16 words. Hare Krishna, Ram, Ram, Ram. And then these devotees in 3-4 minutes, round is finished, 1 hour, 10 minutes chanting, 16 rounds is finished. And you know, person can feel, I'm very expert in chanting because I can finish in less than 1.5 hour or whatever. But if you actually see, either he's skipping the beats, either the beats are jumping, or the syllables are not even chanted, all the words are not even chanted fully. Especially the last Hare and the first Hare. It becomes one. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Ram Ram Ram, Hare Krishna. Hare. Very, very, very common, very common. So then I also tried recording my chanting. Okay, let's record. Let's make a 22 record. Then I recorded and then I was happy that even though I was not attentive at all, when I was not listening to mantra, at least the words are complete and correct. So now, many times it can happen. Some people, you know, those who are a little hardcore, they can come and say, hey, your pronunciation is not correct because you're not from India. Then our pronunciation can be Kisna or some other way of pronouncing Rama or Rama while chanting. It can happen, right? Actually, even to Prabhupada, when he was in India giving a lecture of Hindu Samaj, one of the scholars from Hindu Samaj came and told Prabhupada that even when you are chanting Sanskrit, it is too Bengali. And Prabhupada says, so what can I do? I am born in Bengal. That's how my accent is. I have a Bengali accent. So if someone is from Russia or Australia or America or India, so their English is going to be Indian and their English is going to be based on where they are from. And similarly, their pronunciation can also be based on that. But is Krishna actually looking for that laziness? No. Here we are not talking about that laziness. And then if you try to chant in that same Sanskrit shloka in the same tone and same meter how a Sanskrit scholar born in a Brahmana family, trained in a Gurukul chants, it's actually a waste of time. You know? It doesn't attract Krishna at all, how amazing our pronunciation is. But here we are talking about when we are skipping, when we are lazy to improve on that subject matter. Then the third one, which is the most common and very important one, which on daily basis in our chanting we face, is distractedness. Very distracted. That's called vikshepa. Very distracted. We are so distracted all the time that personally, I would say that after 10-12 rounds finished, I feel very ashamed because I didn't hear anything. After 12 rounds, I haven't heard anything. So out of shame, then I hear 3-4 mantras and then goes back again. It goes back again to its own world. Mind goes back again. Now, one approach is that when that happens, the distractedness is there, that one can really take a hammer on oneself and start hitting that from now on, no matter what happens, no matter who does what, if the door opens, I'm not going to look in the while I'm chanting in the morning. If anything falls, I'm not going to look while I'm chanting. If anything, anyone moves around, I'm not going to see who came in, who went out, and I'm going to chant. And we are so strict and hard on the mind, and we become so discouraged because in 5 minutes we fail. Really. Or maybe that day will last and next day again that will happen. All of us go through this. So determination is important, but determination is not the only factor to remove this distractedness. This demon of mind running to different topics while chanting or different activities. So problem is, mind can go on to different activities. That is little harder in comparison to activities. You know, I can chant and I can use WhatsApp or Facebook. That's a different activity. I can control that. But what to do with my mind? You know, that's a Buridhan Prabhu, Satyananda Maharaj, in their retreats, they talk a lot about of becoming humble. Because when you're dealing with your mind, we really need Krishna's help. We really need Krishna's help a lot. To stop using mobile phone, it's very much in our hands. To be attentive, you know, many years before, one devotee came and told, he was complaining to one senior devotee that, can you tell my wife, because she cleans the whole house while chanting 16 rounds, can you tell her not to do that? The whole house cleaning happens while chanting 16 rounds. My own auntie, she chants 16 rounds, and because daytime she is very busy, now hopefully she has stopped, but you know, night in India, very popular TV serials used to come and no one wanted to miss them. Night 8 to 10 or something. So that was her 8 to 10 japa session while watching. So she would do 16 rounds while watching that 2 hours of TV serials. Because she doesn't want to leave them and that's the only time she gets free from household duties. So she would chant. But she would not fail in finishing 16 rounds. She would chant. But she will not fail in watching that also. So that can be stopped. But when we are chanting and mind is going everywhere and we become so disheartened, so discouraged, beating the mind, you rascal, you know, you are like that. And we become hopeless. That's not required. Then then a very sincere prayer to the Supreme Lord helps the most. But as many expert chanters, they say, some techniques also help. Like Bhurijan Bhu many times mentioned, many times. Just your goal is to chant one mantra, nothing else. There is no other goal you have. Your goal is to just hear the first Hare or first Hare Krishna and then continue. So this inattention can be removed once we understand the problem very well, what we are going through. Then it's very easy for us to establish our sambandha or a relationship with the Supreme Lord, because Kali Kale Naam Rupa Krishna Avatar, in Kali Yuga Krishna has appeared in His holy name. And if that one activity happens properly, then we are sure that the relationship with the Supreme Lord is going to be established. The sambandha is going to be established. And while we are gaining knowledge about that sambandha, as we were discussing about the sambandha bodh, just understanding that this relationship exists and how important it is, it really takes us way ahead in our Krishna consciousness, way, way ahead in our spiritual life. So, just wanted to discuss these few points. Any questions or comments? Yes, Krishna Prabhu.
In the first canto, 7th chapter.
You have to tell the shloka also, I don't know.
I don't know the shloka.
Okay, continue.
And the Lord Sri Krishna says that a person who knows the religion, he does not kill a person who is devoid of his chariot. So then, if he said that in the Mahabharata war, why did he ask Arjuna to kill Karna, who was devoid of his chariot?
Okay, I don't know which verse you're talking about, but in terms of moral codes, your question is very nice, but it is completely out of the class. So I'll quickly answer you. Is that okay? So that your query is solved to a little bit my capacity. So when we are talking about moral codes in battle, in life, in anything, on the level of morality, on the level of human morality, it's wrong. But when we are talking about the Supreme Lord, Krishna being involved in the picture, because Krishna doesn't have any human defect, he doesn't have his whole anything related to him, any activity, his devotees, his place, his paraphernalia, everything is transcendental, and that's the verse 4.9. So your question is actually related to the class. That if we understand Krishna's activities, which are transcendental, you understand the verse 4.9 from Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam, because his activities are transcendental, the human morality doesn't apply to him. And understanding that only takes us closer to Krishna. Because we understand that we are not dealing with the human who is infected by these immoral principles, or on whom these moral laws of the world apply. So when we are talking about Krishna telling Arjuna, now you kill Arjuna, Krishna telling Arjuna to kill Karna has not going to incur any sinful reaction for Arjuna, neither on Krishna. Rather, doing that activity on the order of Krishna is going to give Karna a very high destination, because he's been killed on order of Krishna. Many people don't know, but anyone who died in the battlefield of Kurukshetra by the arrows of Arjuna or by the club of Bhima, all their sinful reactions finished as soon as Arjuna's arrow pierced or Bhima's club touched them, because they were completely in tune with the Supreme Lord's desire. So many people say, oh, Krishna must have been in one part of the battlefield, some soldier would have died somewhere else. How could they attain higher destination? Because the whole scene was run on Krishna's desire. So Arjuna's arrows were so powerful, so much pure in that sense, that as soon as they would pierce a sinful soldier, he would become purified and die and attain higher destination. It's very important to understand Krishna's activities and his appearance. Thank you. It was a related question. Maybe the answer was related. I don't know. Something. Yes, Prabhuji.
So when the soul goes to the spiritual world, Krishna would discover they take it away. And then if
the soul goes to spiritual, yeah.
And when the person lives a sinful life, then Yamadutas will come, will take it. So if the person lives like in the mode of Buddhists, and then he goes to the heavenly planet, so he comes then.
Yeah. So who comes then? Yeah, because he is still under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. So I don't know, maybe Yamaraj, if he has some good Yamadutas for carrying good souls, I don't know about that, but Vishnudutas don't come, of course. And even if a person is a good person, really, believe me or not, even if a person is a good person, he will still not want to leave his body. He will still be forced out of this body. Only a devotee is looking. He's really looking for meeting Krishna. And that's why Prabhupada gives that example of kitten in the mouth of the cat and rat in the mouth of cat. So if a kitten is there in the mouth of the cat, the journey is very smooth. There is no harm, there is no fear, there is no attachment which he's holding on to and he can easily leave. But if a person is mode of goodness, is also a rat. A person in mode of passion is also a rat, and a tamasic, ignorant person is also a rat. Only thing which I can understand from this particular point, if anyone wants to comment, please say, is that attachment is there. Very heavy attachment. Only the pain will be less in comparison throughout the journey and while leaving the body, and then for some particular period, till he exhausts all his good karma, he will enjoy a happy life in heavenly abode. That's my understanding. Is it correct, Adipushu? What do you think? Anything else? Hare Krishna. Granth Rashmi Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Dhruv Maharaj ki jai.